to the unusual tale of the woman who may have been New Zealand's most prolific poisoner. Elspeth Kerr was a prominent nurse in the Auckland suburb of Devonport in the 1930s and faced three trials over the poisoning of her foster daughter, Betty. Betty lived, but as police investigated, they found cause to exhume the bodies of her husband, Charles, who died just a few months before Betty became sick, and another patient called Emma Day. At the time, the case was sensational, but over time it was lost to history. That was until a skeleton was unearthed under a Devonport house in 1992. Scott Bainbridge is with us now to pick up the tale. Author, of course, of a number of investigative titles, including Without a Trace and Still Missing. We last spoke to him about his book, The Fix, which looked at one of New Zealand's biggest swindles. The latest is The Trials of Nurse Kerr. Scott, good morning.
Good morning.
So who was Elspeth Kerr? What is known of her?
Well, she immigrated out from Scotland after the end of the First World War, and she had a bit of a nursing background. She nursed patients during the war, and she came out to set up a nursing home, even though she probably didn't have the correct credentials to do it. But back in the 1920s, you didn't have to have too much nursing experience to be able to operate or open up a private nursing home. And elderly people tended to use this option because it was cheaper than going to licensed hospitals or whatever. And so Nurse Kerr was one of a number of people around the country that opened up their own homes to nurse elderly people. And Nurse Kerr had a home in Devonport. But she didn't only have in-house patients. She was also offered her medical advice and services to the Devonport community. She was the person to go to if there was there were no midwives there. So, you know, she was assisted in the births of many children. But it was also believed that she also offered the services of carrying out abortions to unwed mothers. But yeah, primarily she was she ran a nursing home with at least one or two patients. A new care.
And the story of her and Charles, he was a war veteran, was he not?
That's right. He served in the Home Forces back in Scotland, and he did see a little bit of service, but he came back affected by it. You know, we'd call it today PTSD, but back then he was regarded as a war wreck. He had a background in putting newspapers together, so he ended up getting a job at a local newspaper. But over time, his mental condition deteriorated to the point that, you know, he would wander around the garden mumbling to himself, and they had to let him go from his position. And he just pretty much assisted in the gardens of the nursing home that his wife ran.
So the third person we need to introduce at this stage is Betty. And how did she come to be in Elspeth's care?
Well, Nurse Kerr offered her service to a number of unwed mothers, and Betty's mother came up from Morrinsville to give birth and possibly adopt the child out, because there's no intention of her wanting to keep Betty. But Nurse Kerr had formed a pretty close bond with both the mother and Betty, and there was an agreement that Elspeth and her family would foster Betty, and that was an agreement with everybody, and certainly a lot of people in the community looked on Nurse Kerr as being quite a doting mother to Betty, you know, right up to the point of.
Let's look at how things begin to happen and unfold. What happened with the death of Elspeth's husband, Charles?
Well, he was a fit guy, even though, like, mentally he wasn't all there. But he suddenly went very ill and died a couple of weeks earlier. Elspeth herself was admitted to hospital with some condition, and he fretted for her while she was away. And the day after she got back, or the day after she was discharged, he dropped dead. And back then, the family didn't agree to an autopsy or anything like that. And the Navy doctor, who was a friend of Nurse Kerr, came along and quickly signed off his cause of death as being natural causes, perhaps a heart attack, I think it was, without undergoing an actual autopsy, and he was buried the next day. And Nurse Kerr was naturally pretty upset by it, and her own mental condition deteriorated as well. People felt sorry for her, naturally, but she continued on with her work in the community. And it was about 8 weeks after that that 8-year-old Betty got admitted to hospital. She was close to being in a coma, and the doctors were prepared to operate. They thought that maybe it was her appendix, but her appendix was actually appeared healthy. So while they were mulling over what to do, over a couple of days, Betty's condition just improved immensely, to the point that there was no pain whatsoever. So the doctors discharged her, and I guess wrote it off as one of those unknown ailments. There was a stomach bug going around Devonport around about that time, so they attributed to her illness to that. But then less than a week later, Betty was admitted back into Auckland Hospital in a coma. And it wasn't until a young doctor, John Stallworthy, whose father had been the Minister of Health, he thought something was a little bit suspicious about it, so he arranged for a urine and blood sample to be taken. And that came back that there were traces of Veronal, which was a pretty heavy barbiturate back in the day to help people sleep and also to help with pain. So there was no explanation as to how Betty at the age of 8 could have gotten hold of the Veronal. Nurse Kerr certainly said that there was no Veronal in the house. When police conducted the investigations, they did find Veramon, which is a subsidiary drug from Veronal. But as they started interviewing, or the police started interviewing some of the nurse aides that occasionally assisted with Nurse Kerr with her home care, they said, well, actually, we did see Elspeth with tubes of Veronal. And the police were naturally suspicious, but they didn't really know what to do because by that stage, Betty was in the care of the state, because they knew that something was up. The police contacted James Cummings, who was soon to become a commissioner. He was a quite a well-known detective, and he suggested, look, going into the background of Nurse Kerr and her services in Devonport, and obviously finding out that Charles had died only a month or so earlier, they exhumed his body and found that there were quite high traces of Veronal in his system. Another nurse aide said, well, we did have a patient called Emma Day who was elderly and had a number of strokes, but we felt that she died quite suddenly, so the police exhumed her body a month later and also found high traces of Veronal in her system. So, but the police arrested Elspeth only on the administering the poison to Betty. They couldn't do that with Emma Day or Charles Kerr, because they hadn't proved that Elspeth had administered high traces of that drug to.
The immediate reaction was interesting, wasn't there? Quite the sensation when she was arrested for poisoning Elspeth. But how did friends and colleagues react? She actually had quite the campaigner.
It was a huge shock to the entire community, because she was a pillar of Devonport. I mean, people chose to go to her over their own GP, because she was so knowledgeable in medicine and in ailments. So this was and Devonport being a reasonably small community at that stage, it was a massive shock to everybody. And a lot of people didn't believe it, that she would deliberately go out and poison anybody, let alone her own stepdaughter or her own foster daughter. So the Miriam Soljak, who was one of our earliest campaigners in women's rights, came to the fore and offered the assistance of the women's movement to get behind her. And certainly, there were marches up Queen Street to look at freeing Elspeth. But as the investigation carried on, and it looked more and more like the poison, or administering the poison, was actually deliberate as opposed to accidental, the women's movement just sort of backtracked slightly and left her,
let's talk about the trials, because as you say, there was just one case, really, where the evidence was able to be stood up. And she wasn't charged over the deaths of Charles Kerr or Emma Day, one of her patients. But there was more than one trial. So what unfolded?
It was. Well, she had these, Nurse Kerr had these services of a defence lawyer called Richard Singer, who was one of those maverick lawyers who would, I guess, a very animated type lawyer of his day, that every judge in Auckland would cringe if he was on the defence team. By pure coincidence or by pure chance, Richard Singer's brother was a world-renowned expert in medicine and had written a number of books and had focused on Veronal and other sorts of drugs. So he was able to draw on a lot of that overseas material that the prosecution team and even the doctors at Auckland Hospital couldn't get hold of. And remember, this is the days way before the internet. So, he would have to, write a letter over to his brother over in the UK to get these things sent. And I know that he did trawl all of the universities in New Zealand, and he managed to find a dog-eared report from 1913, I believe, about the effects of Veronal that he was able to use in court. Now, the motivations around her administering the poison, no one really knew what her motivations were. The prosecution team were flummoxed as to why this highly regarded, highly respected nurse would do such a thing. They believed that maybe she was addicted to the Veronal herself, and that that caused a chemical reaction in her brain to cause injury to other people. It wasn't until 20 years later, in 1951, that international experts came up with what we know today as a factitious disorder, or Munchausen's by proxy syndrome, where primarily mothers would cause injuries to their children purely for to gain attention for themselves. And certainly back then, that Munchausen's by proxy wasn't a condition or a syndrome that was even heard of or even thought of. So it would never have been considered during court. But a lot of the defence team never supported the assertion that the drugs or Nurse Kerr being addicted to the Veronal herself would have caused the injuries or caused her to act with an intention to kill people.
Lots of drama in the trial, wasn't there? Richard Singer, the star defence lawyer, managing to prove lax systems and handling samples, and the drug would be freely accessible in a chocolate box on top of a medical cabinet and so forth. But there was another character in the trials, Charles Wheeler. What was the sort of the subtext to his role and perhaps his relationship with Elspeth?
Well, this caused quite a bit of controversy. So Charles Wheeler was the elderly Navy doctor who had since retired. But he was, being in Devonport, there weren't a lot of GPs there. So whenever Nurse Kerr had a patient that required attention, she would just get on the phone to ring him and he'd come straight around. And certainly he was the guy that signed off the death certificates of the husband and Mrs. Day. It came out at the trial that that the causes of death were incorrect, and that Dr. Wheeler had omitted to put anything down about Veronal being in their systems because he didn't check. But just to digress here, the prosecution was able to refer to the deaths of Emma Day and Charles Kerr due to a technicality from a poisoning case many years earlier. So she might not have been charged over their deaths, but the prosecution was able to refer to those two particular cases. But it came out that Dr. Wheeler was the one that was responsible for signing off those deaths and certainly was responsible for inferring to the Auckland Hospital that Betty Kerr may have had appendicitis. So he was cross-examined by Vincent Meredith, who was the Crown Prosecutor at the time. And he basically stood there and he was a hostile witness because I guess he found himself, his own credibility under question. But when he left the stand at that last trial, he blew Nurse Kerr a kiss. And that that stunned everybody, and even the judge at the time couldn't, work out, fathom why he would have done that. So, there was a relationship of sorts between
Yeah.
Dr. Wheeler and Nurse Kerr.
Just adds to the scandal of the times. Scott, what happened to Elspeth ultimately, the little girl who was poisoned, relapsed multiple times and then became well in hospital and then relapsed? What happened to her?
Well, she after or sorry, just after Nurse Kerr's arrest, she became a ward of the court, and she ended up in social welfare care for a number of months, and then her mother, her birth mother, claimed her back. So she returned to the Waikato and grew up. When the builders ex found the skeleton in 1992, the police did contact Betty. They did find have a lot of trouble in tracking her down because at this stage she was probably in her 60s or early 70s herself. And they did interview her about what her recollections were 60 years earlier when she was a child.
Now,
But so
finally,
yes, she did.
yeah. So she lived to a great age, ultimately, though, didn't she?
Yep, she did.
Yeah. Now, to the other part of the story, which is one of your specialties, a skeleton being found under a house where Elspeth had previously lived on Mattie Road. What did that lead to, Scott?
Yeah, well, Nurse Kerr's original, well, she had a number of nursing homes in Devonport, but the one at 2 Mattie Road in Cheltenham Beach, although today it's not number 2, it's number 11, that was torn down in the 1990s to make way for a new house or a new dwelling. And builders were building the foundations and they dug down a certain length and they found traces of bone or a skeleton there. Those bones were, I mean, obviously the site was cordoned off and DSIR took charge of those bones. That was one of the difficulties actually for me, a number of years later to try and find out what actually came of those. The DSIR did confirm that the bones were of a female who had been buried in that spot around about 60 to 70 years earlier. So that ties in with the period that Nurse Kerr had that particular nursing home there. But what they were unable at that stage to identify, the name or the identity of the deceased. And Nurse Kerr wasn't one to keep meticulous records, and the police file certainly didn't have any listing of who was in her care. So, and it was never regarded as suspicious if she had an elderly patient in there and they died. It was just written off as okay, well, they came to the end of their life anyway, so there's no suspicion attributed to their deaths. So, it's impossible to determine who that person was.
They believe, though, that Elspeth was involved, the family?
Yes, yeah. It just well, I mean, you put them together that the bones are definitely weren't pre-European. They were between 60 and 70 years in the ground. So, and that, as I say, would have occurred about the time that Nurse Kerr had the nursing home at that
Wow.
particular location.
Great yarn, Scott. Thank you, Scott Bainbridge. The latest book is called The Trials of Nurse Kerr.